And now for something completely different.
It's a Rich Man's World. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal, the full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
And good morning. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. It is the Real Investment Show this morning on this Thursday edition. It's more like the pre-Friday Eve edition. Congratulations going out this morning to Mr. Russell Sherrill. Good morning, Russell. How are you? He's there. He's trying to figure out why I'm giving congratulations.
He gets us started and he walks down the hall.
I know, right? But no, today is, of course, you know, Russell handles all of our sports and commentary, you know, right here before the show.
Why am I getting congratulated?
That's what I was saying. It's the 100th anniversary. It's the centennial anniversary of the NFL.
Ah.
Yeah, 100 years. So, I mean, is the NFL better today than it was 100 years ago?
No, it's wussified.
Yeah, you know, because 100 years ago, they played with a leather helmet and no pads.
Right.
Yep. So those were, and they played muddy fields. They played when it rained. They played when it snowed.
And they got paid nothing.
And they got paid nothing. And they played for the love of the game. Absolutely. Yeah. So, no, actually, Russell, I wanted to talk to you this morning real quick. I mean, I wanted to get your thoughts on, I'm sure you've talked about it, but I just was curious about A.J. Hinch and the Astros stealing signals. I mean, when you've got a winning team, was it really necessary?
I know, right? With all that talent?
Yeah. I mean, and obviously, because I have Michael Leibowitz in studio with me this morning. He's standing right here by me. And, of course, he's from Maryland.
As a Nationals fan, I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation.
Yeah, and he is a Nationals fan. And so, you know, but here, and apparently stealing signals didn't work in the World Series. So, because we still lost.
I know, right?
But actually, it was interesting because, Mike, what did you tell me yesterday?
They knew signals were being stolen, and they had a whole system between the pitchers and catchers to get around it. So, if anything, Houston may have been like thinking a fastball was coming, and it was a slider, curveball, and it may have actually hurt them at least in the series.
Yeah, but they had actually started that earlier in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, they started at the beginning of the playoffs because they didn't know who was stealing signs and who wasn't.
Interesting. See? So.
But there's a great video on, I found it on sportingnews.com. In fact, it's still on there this morning where this guy's giving a commentary, and you can hear the banging every time. It was against the White Sox, and every time the catcher would put down the changeup sign, you would hear the banging of the trash can, and they knew it was coming.
Yeah. I've heard that one too.
It's so blatant.
Right. Well, and the Red Sox were doing it too. They just fired Cora, their coach.
And here's the thing is like, you know, you've got the, you know, honestly, that has got to be the greatest job in the world. You know, being a coach of, you know, a football team or a national baseball team, that's an awesome job.
Depends what job, right?
Well,
Cleveland Browns?
Okay. Maybe.
Washington Redskins?
But, you're going to throw it all. I mean, look, these guys get paid a boatload. Yeah. Who was the coach, Russell, that just got brought up from college coach, the Baylor coach that just went
Matt
pro?
Rhule.
Matt Rhule. I mean, that guy's going to make $60 million to be coach. I mean, and you're going to screw it up stealing signals? I mean, really? I mean, just Russell would do that job for half the price and not steal signals.
No doubt.
No doubt.
And the sad thing is, too, is at least from the report that A.J. Hinch knew about it, he told the guys to knock it off. In fact, a couple of times, apparently, he got so upset he broke the monitor that they had in the dugouts.
But what
they still replace it and kept doing it.
So what's crazy to me about it is these players get traded and moved all the time. You know that half their players are on other teams after a year or two, and they're telling their coaches what's going on. You can't keep a secret like that.
Right.
Oh, AKA Mike Fiers, he's the one that let it all out.
Yeah. Right. So there you go. Anyway, Michael Leibowitz in studio, actually live with us today. Mike, welcome to Houston.
Thank you. It's nice to be out of my dungeon.
Exactly.
Thanks for letting me out
for
today.
And thanks for coming down and bringing all the wet weather with you, by the way.
Oh, it's nice and warm here.
Well, no, it was beautiful this weekend. We had like 57 degrees. It was blue skies. He rolls into town. It's rain and hot.
So at least the precipitation's melted.
This is true.
It's all relative, Lance. I'll take 70 in rain.
A couple of things to get into this morning here. We're about to run up on our break already. A couple of things to get into this morning. We obviously will talk a little bit about the trade deal that was signed yesterday. It was the greatest deal ever done, apparently, with China. They're going to buy a huge amount of goods from the U.S. Just one thing to keep in mind is that we had a deal with Mexico for them to buy a huge amount of goods from the U.S. And we also had a deal with Europe, which was to buy a huge amount of goods from the U.S. Neither one of those actually happened. And the deal with China is suggesting that they're going to buy $200 billion worth of goods over 2 years, which is about three times the maximum amount of goods they've ever bought from the U.S., period, in any single year. So, you know, the ability for them to actually achieve that goal is going to be questionable. And the fact that they've already set up pipelines with other countries, Brazil, Argentina, Europe, elsewhere in the world, to supply goods and agricultural products that they need is going to be interesting. They're obviously not going to go, you know, turn those pipelines off just in case the U.S. turns around again and slaps tariffs back on them, right? They're going to keep those options open. So, very likely this was a good first step. Honestly, you got the deal signed and
better than nothing,
got it off the table. But the Agricultural Farmers Association had come out this morning saying, hey, you know, we've heard this story before and we're going to get all these purchases and it doesn't happen. And the point about that, and here's the important point about this, I'm a farmer. I raise soybeans or I raise hogs or whatever it is. Well, I've been told before that Mexico was going to buy a bunch of stuff. So I ran out and bought a bunch of equipment. I got all geared up to go grow or raise things. And it didn't happen. So I got stuck with this inventory. And then I heard it was going to happen from Europe and it didn't happen. So what is going to be interesting to watch here is that this deal is signed. We should see, theoretically, if this is a valid deal, we should see a very sharp increase in purchases of ag equipment, farm equipment,
deer and caterpillar should start doing really well.
And we should see that occur. We should see those sales picking up very quickly. If we don't see it, which is what I suspect we won't, is that everybody's going to kind of wait. It'll be a wait and see thing. So, yeah, tell me the order's coming. Give me a PO, and then I'll go out and I'll do this. But I think you're going to see a little bit more pensive attitude towards, making commitments, particularly at this stage of the economic cycle, but primarily because farmers and agricultural individuals have heard this story before and it hasn't come true. And look, China is world renowned for reneging on deals. it's like China and, look up reneging in the dictionary and it's a picture of China right there.
As soon as phase two gets tricky, phase one goes out the window.
Exactly. So we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about the impact of the trade deal. And also Nancy Pelosi running up to the Senate yesterday, dropping off the...
Did you get your pen?
I did not. Isn't that hysterical? She's actually giving out souvenir pens as she was dropping off the articles of impeachment. She's giving out impeach me pins.
Impeach me pins.
We'll be right back after the break. I'm Rose Lance Roberts. Michael Leibowitz in studio. Don't go away. I get along without your welcome. You
took me for everything that I had and kicked me out of my home. Listen to the Real Investment Show podcast from your favorite service. Same show, your schedule at realinvestmentadvice.com.
If the stock market were a highway, 2019 was a smooth ride. Don't expect the same in 2020. If you're 3 to 5 years from retiring or have just retired, you need to attend our next RIA Advisors Right Lane Retirement class, where we'll cover Social Security, Medicare, long-term care, and now, with the passage of the SECURE Act, why creating a tax-friendly paycheck in retirement is more important than ever. Our next class is January 25th in the Woodlands. Get in the right lane for retirement. Register online now at RIAAdvisors.com. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the show this morning. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Michael Leibowitz, CFA, joining me live in studio. Normally he's up in the D.C. area.
It's great to be here in Houston.
Nice to have you here. So let's kind of get into this. We got a couple of big stories this morning. We've got trade deal signed yesterday. We've got impeachment starting today. This is going to be interesting. There's a whole procession that goes on with this. So Nancy Pelosi takes over to the Senate yesterday. She walks over to the Senate. The two articles of impeachment, along with her souvenir pins that she's now passing out. Then there are the managers of the impeachment process that will go and actually read the articles. This will occur today between, I think, 12 and 2 your time today in New York time. They'll actually going to stand there and read these articles of impeachment.
That's a snoozer.
This is exciting stuff. In the meantime, the senators can't have any electronic equipment. There's no communication in or out. They can't have anything else to read other than the articles of impeachment. They're thrilled with this prospect. All 100 senators will be involved in this process. After the reading of the articles of impeachment, blah, 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 then they will start answering questions of the senators and potentially call in witnesses and all this type of stuff. So, that's kind of where this is going to kind of start to grind on. And this is going to be, I suspect, it's going to be kind of an arduous process here and a lot of media headlines given to it every day about what's happening.
Well, I think Pelosi did send it over to the Senate finally because they agreed, her and McConnell agreed on something, and it wasn't, I think at the end of the day, she wanted a very lengthy trial. McConnell wanted a 2-hour trial.
Right.
and there's probably some middle ground that they agreed on, and it will get drawn out probably more than people think it will.
Yeah, and that could obviously have some, it's going to eat up a lot of airtime. It could have some consequences to markets as well if it looks like things really aren't going
There's no upside for the markets.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's probably going to fail in the Senate, and that'll be that. But this could take
a while.
Days, weeks, whatever it's going to be. And there's going to be ugly things coming out.
Yeah. So we're going to have that going on for us to talk about over the next few days. And, of course, the other side is this trade deal that did get signed yesterday. And, unfortunately, this kind of impeachment process is going to kind of quickly kind of gloss over the accomplishment of getting the trade deal signed. But we did get that signed yesterday, and as we were just talking about a second ago, be a little careful jumping out and going out and buying, stocks or investments that may be benefited by the agricultural trade deal, because we've seen these deals before, they haven't happened. And, so we could see a disappointment in both prices and earnings if things don't come through as expected.
And the other thing is, like we were talking about Deere, Caterpillar, those stocks have priced in whatever extra machinery has to be bought to meet China's needs.
Right.
So they're almost set up for failure at this point. If the deal goes through and they buy everything, maybe there's a little upside. But if China reneges, there's probably more downside than upside.
I think so. One of the interesting bylines to this, though, is that and even this was said yesterday, kind of repeatedly, is this just kind of something to get done? They got this done. They got this agreed to, and this is kind of the first step towards phase two. But phase two is really, if we go back and look, and we actually wrote about this last September, talking about the trade deal, is that we get a trade deal done prior to the election because we needed to get this off the table. Trump needed a win, quote unquote, in the books, for the election process. So now during the campaign trail, he's saying, hey, I got a deal signed with China on trade, right? So that's a feather in his cap, no doubt about that. But these were pretty easy. This was a pretty easy deal to actually get signed because when this whole trade deal started, China agreed to all of these concessions that are in this phase one trade deal like a year and a half ago. 80% of the things that we were asking for, China had already agreed to.
China needs them.
Yeah.
Right? It's hogs, it's soybeans. Their population is really having a lot of trouble sourcing food, and prices have been going through the moon.
Right. And, of course, they've also had a big swine flu epidemic going on, which has killed about a third of their pork population. So they needed, so to Mike's point, right, they needed this. The hard stuff, right, the things that impact their economic 2050 outlook, we didn't touch that.
No.
That's what's coming in phase two, and it's going to be very – and so two things, my opinion only, is that we won't see part two of the trade deal even kick up till after the election. And because this is going to be a very, very difficult negotiation, and odds are, you know, there's not going to be a lot of accomplishment at that point. Because if I'm China, why am I going to agree to a guy that's a lame duck president? I mean, Donald Trump's in office for, you know, 3-4 more years from whatever point they're going to sign a deal. So why am I going to agree to something that impacts me, President Xi's in office for life? Why am I going to sign a deal for my country that's not necessarily good for China 2050 for a guy that's going to be in office in 4 years? Because whoever's next in office, which will probably be a Democrat, because that's how we kind of alternate throughout history. I mean, you have Republican presidents, you have a Democrat, vice versa. Then, you know, they're going to completely reverse the whole whatever deal there was, right? They're not going to uphold it. So, you know, you have to also almost imagine that President Xi is like, look, I'll agree to phase one because I need those things anyway. And phase two, man, we'll worry about it later.
And there's other parts. So they haven't released the details.
Right.
So we don't know what's in there. My guess is a lot of it has to – what really excited Trump is currency, that they agreed not to manipulate their currency, which means that the dollar – that the yuan, which is Chinese currency, will not depreciate versus the dollar, maybe even appreciate, mm-hmm. making our goods cheaper in China so we can export a little bit more. They get goods a little bit cheaper, which they need, especially with the agriculture. And it's, you know, to some respect, a win-win. And then who knows what else is in there? It may be that we stop talking about Taiwan. It may be something in the South Seas. You know, there's probably some military aspect, but I believe it's the currency is what drove both sides mm-hmm. to the table. And the agriculture is what makes nice headlines, but there's probably more teeth to it that are more, you know, economic.
Right. You know, well, one thing that we talked about, which is, you know, talking about the currency, this is an interesting part. So if the trade deal does result in weaker currency for the U.S., so by the way, all that means is when you're talking about weaker currency is it just means that our dollar is weaker in price relative to other currencies. So in other words, the Chinese yuan goes up. And even if the price of our dollar doesn't change because their currency gets stronger, ours is weaker because of the differentials between the two currencies. That's all that means. When somebody talks about a weaker dollar, it doesn't mean that our dollar is falling off a cliff. It just means that our dollar isn't appreciating as fast as potentially as another currency. So it's just those differences. But there is an aspect to this, and Mike and I talked about this just recently. In fact, we're releasing a video this Friday of our 2020 outlook for markets and investing and why we're managing portfolios the way that we're doing them now. You know, part of our outlook for 2020 is a weaker currency relative to other currencies, which is beneficial for things like oil prices, like gold, like, you know, other commodity-based materials, because those trade in dollars everywhere in the world. So if our currency is weaker relative to another currency, then there's an opportunity for those prices to appreciate.
And in general, it's inflationary, which means that the price of goods go up, which means there is, in dollar terms, more economic activity. So it makes the economy look a little better on a nominal basis, although we do take out inflation, but inevitably inflation is underreported. So it can be an economic, on paper, an economic boost.
Right. But and again, some opportunities. I mean, now, unfortunately, you know, we had this little kick up in oil prices just recently because of the whole Iran situation. That's kind of rolled back over here.
Right.
We were talking about potentially trying to maybe take on some additional energy exposure in portfolios, but you got to be very picky with that space. There's a lot of landmines within the energy space. So there's a lot of companies in the energy sector which are surviving on very, very cheap and easy to get debt. And that is likely going to change here very soon, and particularly if the interest rates kick up at all, there's a real problem in the energy patch. So you got to be real careful about what you buy in the energy sector. But if we do wind up with higher oil prices because of a weaker dollar, there may be some opportunities. And in energy last year, the market was up 30%. Energy was the worst performer last year.
No, and that's been going on for 10 years.
Right.
And I think energy, more so than any other stock, you really have to focus on the balance sheet and what are their borrowing needs and how much could a rise in interest rates hurt them, or are they even able to borrow if the market partially shuts down?
Yeah. And again, but there is some value in that sector as opposed to
Absolutely.
Other sectors of the market. We published out a report this morning about things that kind of remind me and Mike of 1999. And, you know, we've got a list of about 10 stocks that have that have gone up 30-40% in a month.
Well, what was funny was we were looking for a chart of a stock in the late 90s that went to the moon.
Right.
And we kept naming companies. And Lance, I was naming companies, and Lance would say, nope, out of business. Nope, out of business. Nope, bought. Nope, out of business. And JDS Uniphase, AOL. There were a whole
SDLI.
Bunch. Netscape.
Yeah, no, they're all gone. Global Crossing, Enron, right. WorldCom.
How did those gains work out
yeah,
for you?
Exactly. Well, actually, the very interesting, you know, if you bought Cisco Systems, which is still around today, if you bought Cisco Systems in January of 2000, you actually have a 10% loss on your investment today.
Maybe with dividends, you're even.
Yeah.
Even.
even. All right. Be right back after the break. I want to switch gears when we come back and talk a little bit about why the Federal Reserve may actually be trapped. And what's happening with policy there. And there is a whole change, kind of a landscape change that's occurring. And so we've actually got an article about this on our website today. So if you go by realinvestmentadvice.com and click on our website, there's an article said why the Fed won't prevent the next crisis. They'll actually cause it. And we'll talk about the reason why when we come back from the break. Don't believe me, just watch.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
If the stock market were a highway, 2019 was a smooth ride. Don't expect the same in 2020. If you're 3 to 5 years from retiring or have just retired, you need to attend our next RIA Right Lane Retirement Class, where we'll cover Social Security, Medicare, long-term care, and now, with the passage of the SECURE Act, why creating a tax-friendly paycheck in retirement is more important than ever. Our next class is January 25th in the Woodlands. Register online now at RIAAdvisors.com. Get in the right lane for retirement. RIAAdvisors.com.
Welcome back to the show. Sports 634. Michael Leibowitz, CFA, joining me in studio live from his normal office in Maryland, where it snows and all that kind of stuff.
All kinds of good stuff.
But you have a beach close by. Your beach is actually better than our beach, right? So we have a beach that's about an hour.
So you've never been to Ocean City, Maryland?
No. Well, yeah, you haven't been to Galveston, Texas.
Right.
Brent, give Mike a quick descripto.
Ocean City wins. Galveston's like that little cake on the edge of your toilet bowl.
Kind of that idea.
And the currents in the Gulf are the swirling of the water in the toilet bowl.
So the water at Ocean City, Maryland may be a little nicer, but everything else ain't.
So, yeah. We'll see.
Right.
Well, I'll take you to Galveston next time you're down for the
summer.
And
you'll come out to Ocean City.
Yeah, I'll come out to Ocean City.
I'll drop you off, and then I'll go up to Delaware, and I'll come pick you up a week later.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Each of you bring back a sample of water. We'll put it on the camera.
Exactly.
Compare.
All right. So Federal Reserve. A couple of things that we've talked about here lately is that, of course, the Federal Reserve, and we've talked about this whole issue with repo, which has been kind of forming some type of bailout for somebody somewhere, and we don't know who it is. The records have been sealed, but we know that there's something that's not quite right going on with all this, and that the Fed is actually monetizing debt. The Federal Reserve has been buying bonds that have been issued 3 days prior. So as soon as the Treasury issues a bond to raise capital to pay for our deficit spending, which we're now running in excess of $1 trillion a year, the Federal Reserve is then buying those bonds. Through other banks. So a bank has to buy it, and then the Federal Reserve buys it from the bank, and then that money flows into the system.
Buying it with printed money. You left out a crucial part.
It's true. Yes, the printing presses are running full bore,
right.
By the way. But here's the interesting aspect of this, and we actually have an article about this today on our website. So if you go to realinvestmentadvice.com, there is a belief right now, because look, markets are all-time highs. Absolutely. I mean, the markets are going to open today. We're going to be at our target. We set a target last July of 3,300 for the S&P 500. we're hitting that today. And that target was for all of 2020. So
we're done for the year.
We're done for the year. Hit our target.
Let's go home. Come back in January.
So then we'll have to boost our target to 3,500 now.
Well, that's
so,
what Wall Street does.
I know, right? Just keep pushing it up. But, you know, the interesting thing is that while Wall Street believes there's actually that the Fed has actually got everything under control, right? The Fed's not going to allow anything to happen, not going to allow anything to happen to the economy. We saw that in December of 2018, right? So the Federal Reserve had come in and you know, in September, and we had all kind of had high hopes for Jerome Powell. He was not a markets guy. He was a true kind of Fed practitioner. And that he would come in and do exactly what he did, which was start to reduce the balance sheet, start to remove QE, start to raise interest rates a bit, and kind of prepare the Federal Reserve for the next recession whenever it would come. Well, as soon as we had a little bit of a hiccup, everything reversed, right? And so he learned very quickly that he has to be a markets guy. So the juxt of the article today, which is this idea that...
And by markets guy, I think what you're alluding to is that he has to support markets at all times?
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Just like, making sure.
Like Ben Bernanke.
Right.
Ben Bernanke's third mandate was, oh, yes, we target asset prices.
You mean his first mandate?
Exactly. But so the premise of the article today is that everybody has this belief that the Federal Reserve now has everything under control. We can't have a recession. We can't have a market crash. Take on all the risk you want in the markets, whether it's, you know, junk bonds or stocks that have no earnings value, whatever it is. But the reality is that the real problem potentially becomes when an issue occurs, some exogenous event occurs, that starts a cascade event across multiple areas of the markets. This is not 2000, and this is not 2007. In 2000, baby boomers were not 65 years of age and retiring. In 2007, baby boomers were not 65 years of age and retiring. Boomers are retiring at a rate of 10,000 people a day. Their pensions are on the line, and there's a $7 trillion funding gap for pensions. So if you blow a hole in the market, you're then going to create a cascade event of credit market issues, pension issues, and a whole variety of other market-related events that the Federal Reserve simply cannot afford or has the ability to bail out because they can only buy debt issuance. So this is the juxt of the article today, and it's on our website now, why the Fed might cause the next crisis, not actually prevent it. But Mike, to you, you know, one thing that's really been talked about lately is the fact that this really isn't QE. All the Fed is doing is buying very short-term bills, and those expire within 30 days, and then they've got to buy them again. They're just providing short-term liquidity. But from the market standpoint, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's probably a duck. But that's all changing, though, in the next few months, and the Fed is going to make a change.
Well, it's QE. You know, with all of QE, even if they go and buy five-year Treasury notes, mm-hmm. when that 5 years comes up, those things mature, and they go buy new ones. Mm-hmm. So whether they're rolling every 5 years or every 1 month or every 3 months, it doesn't matter. Operationally, you're doing the same exact thing. And it's having the same exact effect on the market, because if they were just doing 1 and 3 month Treasury purchases and they would mature, mm-hmm. and that would be it, that's different. I would agree. That's a one-time operation. But they're already rolling stuff over, and they have no intention of letting the size of their balance sheet drop. This is going to go on and on. And I think what ultimately, like you just alluded to, what ultimately happens is that they get, it's just a lot. All these 1 and 3 month bills constantly coming up. It's a lot to keep rolling them over. And I think they just say, okay, we'll just buy a 5 year or 10 year and avoid having to do so much transacting on an almost daily basis.
Yeah, and I think what we'll see over the next few months and into the end of this year is that we'll see that actually occur. So we'll start to move from, you know, 1 month bills to maybe 3 month bills to 1 year bills, and they'll just start extending out the duration, and then gradually that'll just kind of meld into the balance sheet of 10-year treasuries at some point.
This is all, I use that hashtag Fed gibberish, because they try to say things in different ways so you think it's something different.
Right.
I was actually talking to a good friend of ours, Jack Scott,
right,
and I said, think about the word quantitative easing, QE. Right. What is it? Easing, we all know what easing is in economics. That means they're lowering rates to stimulate the economy. Quantitative is just to count something. So they're buying bonds. Why is that just not easing? Because, you know, it's because they have to make it more confusing.
Right. Well, you know, quantitative easing, it sounds very...
It sounds like they know what they're doing.
Exactly. I mean, qualitative easing, I mean, that doesn't really play in very right? And easing is just too short.
And easy easing would...
and they can't be honestly true about it. Just say, hey, no, we're just juicing the market.
Right.
So, you know, just call it what it is.
Right. Market support 101.
Yeah. Steroids. Kind of like Barry Bonds.
There you go. Yeah, but.
Yeah, but Michael wrote this really great piece yesterday about Barry Bonds and the relation to the markets called Yeah, But. And it's actually on the website now. It's a really great read because, you know, Barry Bonds was one of the greatest hitters in the history of baseball.
Right, yeah. Barry Bonds was a great player. And if you look at his stats, especially after he took steroids, he may have been one of the greatest ever. And this is in his mid-late 30s. But there were steroids. And well, you know, he'll pay for that.
Yeah, Lance Armstrong, you know, seven-time winner of the Tour de France.
Right.
You have to say it with the France.
The France.
Yeah, so you have to, the France. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, he was a seven-time winner. Yeah, but.
Right. Right.
It cost him more than, I think it cost him more than he wanted to.
I don't know what we're allowed to say on the radio.
Exactly. Not that one. Yeah.
So that's the problem, though, is that they're using stimulus and they're getting the desired effects. The market's going up, but there's no real benefit to the market, to the economy. You're just pushing stock prices beyond what makes sense based on earnings, based on profits.
Well, and that's kind of really the big concern here is that, you know, when you take a look at price to earnings growth, it's at an all-time high record. Take price to sales. That's at an all, you know, we're at the highest level in terms of that ratio, price to sell. So in other words, investors are just way, way, way overpaying for what they're getting. But it's the hope that, you know, all of a sudden the Fed Reserve can engineer this soft landing and we're about to have this explosion of economic growth coming. The question is, where is it going to come from?
Yeah.
Right? What's going to drive that economic growth? Because if you take a look kind of everywhere in the world, whether it's not just the U.S., but it's Europe, it's China, you know, the debt input has reached massive levels of where they're simply getting to the point where you just can't keep leveraging up the debt at a rate fast enough to keep the organic economic growth going.
Of both the market and the economy.
Exactly. So, quick break. We'll be back. More with Michael Leibowitz. Wrap up the show this morning. Don't go away. You're listening to The Real Investment Show. Get by the website. Both those articles on the website now. Yeah, but. Talking about Barry Bonds. And, of course, the Fed, they won't necessarily avert the next crisis. They may very well cause it. It's on the website now, realinvestmentadvice.com. We'll be right back. Broken looking glass.
7 years of bad luck. Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes. Listen anyplace, anytime at iTunes.com.
If the stock market were a highway, 2019 was a smooth ride. Don't expect the same in 2020. If you're 3 to 5 years from retiring or have just retired, you need to attend our next RIA Advisors Right Lane Retirement Class, where we'll cover Social Security, Medicare, long-term care, and now, with the passage of the SECURE Act, why creating a tax-friendly paycheck in retirement is more important than ever. Our next class is January 25th in the Woodlands. Get in the right lane for retirement. Register online now at RIAAdvisors.com. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the show this morning. I'm Real Science Roberts and Michael Leibowitz, CFA, joining me live as the looks like a polar vortex is blowing towards Maryland right about the time you're going to fly home.
You know what? I think I'm going to tell my wife my flight got canceled and they're not scheduling any new flights.
So what? It's supposed to be like 59 degrees this weekend, Brent? Yeah. So yeah, nice little cool snow. I guess we got some rain coming though first.
Yeah, a little bit. Just to wash the crud out of the air.
I just washed my truck like last week and
you're
now it's all dirty. Yeah.
You're the one.
So I'm just going to give up and wait.
You wouldn't do well with the salt and crud all over your car up.
No. We
have to let it go because it's just permanent during the winter.
So everybody just drives around with that brown stuff hanging off the bottom of their car?
Pretty much.
They really are rust buckets.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, don't buy your car from up north, by the way. That used to be my dad's thing growing up, is that he said, son, you never buy a car in Houston, right? Because they're all, you know, corroded with salt.
So, or we're like, in a hurricane, flooded.
Right. Yeah, that we didn't have floods as much back then. We had a few. I mean, we had Hurricane Carla, our house got flooded. Alicia, our house got flooded. Mm-hmm.
Freeport yeah. always flooded.
Yeah, we flooded a lot. Yeah. I mean, every time there's a hurricane, we flooded. Because I was trying to remember, we got flooded three times. We got flooded with Carla, oof. Alicia, maybe Hugo. Was it Hugo?
Probably.
I'm trying to remember when Hugo was.
Yeah.
We got flooded three times, but. When Alicia blew in, our house is in the middle of getting flooded, and I'm in my bedroom packing my bags to leave to go to college. And my dad's like, you're not leaving. I go, just watch me.
See
ya. And as soon as the eye of the hurricane hit, I was out of there. Haven't been back since.
God, well, the getting was good.
Right, I know, right? No, Lake Jackson is one of those towns. And look, it's a great little town to grow up in. Back then, there was only like 20,000 people. It was just a chemical plant town. That's all it was. Everybody worked for Dow Chemical.
Good town to be from.
My dad taught tennis to everybody in Lake Jackson, mm-hmm. right? So if you ask about my dad, everybody knew who my dad was. Because he probably taught tennis, either the parent, the wife, the child, somebody learned tennis somewhere along the way. But anyway,
everyone except you,
except me. No, he tried to teach me. Right? He tried to teach me, but my dad was this. He was a professional tennis player, so he wanted to ensure that I was going to be a professional tennis player. Mm. So we get on the court, and then when I couldn't do it exactly right, he'd throw a racket at me or he'd hum a ball at me like 100 miles an hour. So finally, I was like, well, forget you. And I learned to play racquetball just to tick him off, because in racquetball, you just slap your wrist everywhere. Right. It doesn't really matter. In tennis, you got to keep it really firm. So it just frustrated him to no end that I played racquetball. And then I got into martial arts after that.
And so, now your kids are returning the favor.
Yeah, no, they just don't pay attention to me at all. So that's all they do is just, you know, ask me for money and don't pay attention to me. So they're really sweet.
Sounds familiar.
They're really sweet when they want money. Right.
So. Other than that, forget it.
Exactly. Anyway, yeah, you got a bunch of kids.
I have three kids.
Yeah.
They all want money.
And they're all getting ready to go. They're, yeah,
one's in college, one's going to college, and one better go to college and get out of my house.
This is my goal, just get them off the payroll at this point. So I've got a few years.
Well, just because they're in college doesn't mean they're not on the payroll.
I know. But mine aren't. When mine turn 18, they're off.
They're done.
They're on their own. They got to figure it out.
That's why they're not nice to you.
Exactly. How old's your youngest?
Youngest is 15.
Yeah, mine's 13. So yeah, we're in there for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's a whole nother story. So yeah, I've got my wife still slogging around the house right now with her boot on her surgery foot.
Slide.
I know. Slide. I'm telling you, it is this. I got to record this because honestly. Last night, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. She got up and through the house, you hear this shh, puck. And I've got to record it because I'm going to send it to Hollywood because it's just a great soundtrack for a horror movie. So it's a function. Anyway.
Or we can sample it for a mixtape.
I'm telling you. You might be onto that. Yeah. So, all right, get ready to kind of wrap up the show this morning. Really kind of, we're about to kick off an earnings season. Banks have started announcing earnings last couple of days.
So what's the question I ask you about twice a week?
What's that question?
Every morning.
What's that?
Can we sell now?
Yes.
So every morning, our day starts off, we talk about markets, and I'm like, can we sell a little bit more today? Take some profits, take a couple cards off the table, and then we have a discussion, and we have done a little bit.
Yeah. But I generally fight that trend.
He does. And he's been dead on right.
I know. Everybody thinks I'm bearish, right?
Right.
So I'm like, no, just leave it. It's doing okay. Don't mess with it. But no, we actually did last Friday. We actually wound up, you know, taking some profits. And I think we'll probably wind up doing some more here if this kind of keeps going, because this pace of acceleration is getting more and more extreme every day. And we talked about and pretty much every day now has been this, you know, kind of chart of the day that's been coming out, you know, for our subscribers that are a pro. Also on our Twitter feeds, you know, just showing different variations of the markets and kind of the extreme overbought, overvaluation,
overextended, overbought, over this, over that.
That, and just overly
over complacent.
You know, the put call ratio is a historic lows now, which means that basically nobody is hedging for risk.
But the hardest part is when you go back and you publish some great graphs of 1999. Those stocks went up 80, 90, 100% in a month.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got out mid-month, maybe you made 40%, and that's great, but you left 50% on the table.
Right. Well, no, it is. But again, like Qualcomm is a good example. In 1 month, Qualcomm went up 90% in the month of December in 1999. If you held that stock until December of 2000, you turned that 95% gain into a 10% loss. So, and this was interesting because, you know, this is where Jim Cramer came out with his, in 1999, Jim Cramer came out with his list of the top 10 stocks for the next decade. And these were the stocks to own for the next decade. They were companies like Lucent Technologies and Global Crossing and others. Those top 10 stocks, as of the end of 2002, 8 of them had filed for bankruptcy and 2 of them had basically lost almost all their value.
Wow.
So now, again, you go, well, yeah, but Lance, if you'd bought Amazon, well, look how much money you'd made. But you actually would have given up almost 90% of your gains and had been down in your position for several years, really until after the financial crisis before Amazon came back.
And you could have waited to buy Amazon to 2003 and bought many more shares.
Sure.
And as much money as you would have made buying it in 1999, you would have made a lot more.
Yeah. And same thing with Cisco Systems, right? Mm-hmm. Cisco Systems was a great stock in the late 90s. If you had bought it, like I said earlier, and bought it and held it till today, you're still down 10% in it. But if you had bought it in 2014, which is where the bottom of the stock actually was, now that's hard to imagine, right? Cisco Systems hit a high in 1999. In 2011, 9, 10, 11, it was at its all-time lows. Right. And you could have bought those shares for $12, $13 a share. They're trading in the 40s now. And that's where you really would have made your money.
And here's the lesson. A good company and a good stock are two different things.
Correct.
Companies can be good. I wrote about Coca-Cola for RI Pro about a week ago. Great company, but its stock is just way overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true for a lot of Apple. Apple's a great company. They're going to be making money 10, 20, 30 years from now. But that doesn't mean the price of the stock is at the right level.
Well, and Apple's such a great example, right? Because everybody knows Apple. Everybody's very familiar with it. And, you know, when you take a look, and again, we could kind of go back to talking about this. And Apple was 18 times earnings a year ago, right? It's currently trading at 26 times earnings now. And what's interesting is if you take a look at sales, the sales today are about just a little bit more than what they were back in 2014. They actually haven't increased sales that much. In 2015, sales were $233 billion. Today, they're $260 billion. So you've increased sales. Now, $30 billion sounds like a lot, right?
But I'll take it.
Yeah, right, $30 billion. But they've only increased sales by $30 billion. They've reduced their shares outstanding dramatically. But earnings per share, now this is the other thing, right? So in earnings per share, the stock earned $9.26 in earnings per share in 2015. They earn $11 today, but the stock is up 300% in that time frame.
Right.
So, you know, the question is, and again, this kind of always goes back to, you know, what you pay and what you get, is that investors are back to really overpaying for value in things that they want to own because it's simply kind of the hot thing to own. And money's crowding into these large cap stocks, Microsoft, Apple, because passive ETFs have now broached $10 trillion in assets as of this month. So $10 trillion of invested capital are inside ETFs. Well, all these ETFs own the same companies for the most part. So there's, you know, there's multiple forms of the S&P, there's multiple forms of the NASDAQ, there's multiple forms of the Dow. And guess what's in all three of those? Apple and Microsoft.
Apple's in every ETF.
Yeah, exactly. And Apple's in Microsoft as well is just about in every ETF.
Apple's in some growth funds and some value funds.
Exactly. It's both. It's in technology and it's in consumer goods.
It is.
So, yeah. And that's really the point. So you've got a lot of this buying that is happening in these particular companies that is not really organic in nature. And what I mean by that is organic is that people are buying baskets of stocks which happen to own the stock, which is making it go up in price. Unfortunately, it also works in reverse. If we ever do get in a position to where we start getting a liquidation event in the market, I know that'll never happen because of the Fed. But if it ever does happen, you're going to get an accelerated sell-off in these stocks because of the unwinding effect of that leverage.
Right. And just be careful of what you think are safe conservative stocks, because they may be safe conservative companies with steady earnings, but they're not necessarily safe conservative stocks.
There you go. All right, that wraps us today. Michael Lee Woods, thank you so much. We're going to be producing a podcast here later on today for next week as well, really kind of talking about markets, Fed, money, all that. We'll have that on our website as well. But again, the outlook for our 2020 investment outlook will be out this Friday in the newsletter. So make sure you subscribe to the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Just click on the newsletter link, subscribe there, and we will get you the newsletter this weekend. But that'll contain that video. It's our macro view of the markets, money, and how we're positioning for it. That'll be out this weekend. Get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Send us your questions, comments, emails. Let me know what I can do to help you. Always happy to do it. And we'll see you on the next edition of The Real Investment Show right here on The Voice of Texas. Chris Salcedo is coming right up. It's a rich man's world.